Hi, it's Amy Siskin of The Weekly List and author of the book, The List, and welcome to episode 2 of The Weekly List podcast, which accompanies week 82 on The Weekly List website, theweeklylist.org, and corresponds to the week ended June 9th, 2018. Welcome! This week I want to talk about 5 different themes before we get into a recap of what happened. One is the attacks on the truth. No, you're not imagining it. Things are getting worse. The Washington Post has been tracking Trump's lies since he took office. In the first 100 days, Trump told on average 4.9 lies per day. In his first 500 days, which we've now hit, he's now telling an average of 6.5 lies per day. And we've currently exceeded 3,300 lies he's told since he took office, which obviously takes a toll on those of us trying to decipher what is true and what is not. Fox News continues to assist him in this endeavor and his new weapon of having people going on air on Fox and then tweeting back what they said to amplify and give it validity with his audience. The second theme I want to talk about is what's happening in our southern border, which we talked about last week with migrant children being separated from their parents. This week, in the beginning of the week, Senator Merkley brought attention to what's happening by visiting down there and trying to see a Walmart store, which has been converted into a place to hold children who have been separated from their parents. We're going to talk about that. We're also going to bookmark at the end of the week some disturbing things that happened at the Group of Seven G7 summit in Quebec, Canada, where Trump continues his pattern of alienating our allies, this week Canada and some of our close European allies, while cozying up with Kim Jong-un ahead of a summit happening this coming week, as well as Putin, who strangely and suddenly is very much back in the picture. The fourth theme, and I take a little bit of solace in this, is this is the about third week where we've seen some minor whimpers from the Republican Party standing up to Trump. There were 4 times the Republican Party went against Trump this week, which is unusual and unprecedented in recent months. The first was Spygate, which Trump has used as a conspiracy theory to say that the FBI spied on his campaign during the 2016 election. This week, Paul Ryan came forward and said that that is not true, that the FBI informant was not spying on Trump. Richard Burr, who is the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, came forward with the same remarks. So those two, in addition to in past weeks, Gowdy and McConnell, have all spoken out against Trump on Spygate. The only one who is still with him on this one is Nunes. The second is ZTE, which on Thursday, Wilbur Ross told CNBC that the Trump regime had executed a definitive agreement with ZTE, the Chinese telecom company, to allow them to come back and do business in the U.S. On Thursday, bipartisan group of senators, including Trump ally Tom Cotton, said they would introduce an amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act, which would restore penalties on ZTE for violating sanctions against Iran and North Korea. Also on tariffs, Bob Corker, seeking to take away the reins of what Trump has been doing with unilaterally imposing tariffs, formed a bipartisan group that is trying to move forward on legislation to block Trump. And strange bedfellows, he also has support of Koch Industries and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And finally, a group of moderate House Republicans are banding together in hopes of making progress on DACA, which Trump had repealed, to try to give those rights back to Dreamers. And as a final theme this week, I want to point towards things Trump is doing that are not normal as the Mueller probe closes in, both for himself, trying to set some new precedents, but also for his Department of Justice, which he has had a heavy hand in interfering with. It started out in the beginning of the week as the New York Times reported on a 20-page memo that had been written from Trump's attorneys back in January that basically was saying to Mueller that Trump could not be obstructing justice because he is the president. This would be trying new constitutional law, but that's their position. Also this week on Monday, Trump tweeted that he could pardon himself. And later, as the week went on, said that he might pardon up to 3,000 people. So this is basically putting himself in a position of being the arbiter of truth. He said some of these other rulings might not have been fair. So now he's deciding what's fair. And then two cases that were really not normal and disturbing with Trump's Department of Justice under Sessions, who seems to really be pushing hard, Sessions, to keep his job and please Trump. The first was a frivolous lawsuit brought forward by conservative states led by the state of Texas that argued that protections for people with pre-existing conditions under the Affordable Care Act should be invalidated. Typically, the Department of Justice is responsible for actually fighting against something like that. But Sessions DOJ filed a brief supporting this obscure lawsuit. If that protection goes away, the Kaiser Family Foundation estimates that approximately 52 million Americans under the age of 65 could lose access to health care. Legal experts expressed shock. One professor at University of Michigan, Nicholas Bagley, said, quote, "The Justice Department has a durable, longstanding, bipartisan commitment to defending the law." The second example that happened this week with Sessions DOJ that is not normal is they went after a reporter, not known to her, and were surveilling both her emails and her phone conversations while she was at the New York Times and previously at BuzzFeed and Politico. This came about when a senior staffer, James Wolf, who was a staffer on the Senate Intelligence Committee, this week was arrested and charged with lying repeatedly to the FBI about his contacts with three reporters. It also came to light that the Department of Justice had seized Atkins' phone and email records over years. On Thursday, the New York Times denounced the seizure, saying the move, quote, "will endanger reporters' ability to promise confidentiality to their sources and ultimately undermine the ability of a free press," end quote. On Friday, the Committee to Protect Journalists also expressed concern about the seizure and called the move, quote, "a fundamental threat to press freedom." So that was the first time that Sessions Department of Justice that we know of has done this without going through public channels. It had surveilled a reporter without them knowing about it. So that's something to keep an eye on. So those are some notable trends. But now let's talk about the news. And I had mentioned Senator Merkley's visit to the southern border. That in the beginning of this week, thankfully, brought a lot of attention to something we spoke about that unfortunately continues to get very little media coverage, inexplicably in my mind. On Sunday evening, Senator Merkley posted a video showing he was denied entry to a former Walmart in Brownsville, Texas, that is currently being used as a detention center for migrant children who have been separated from their parents as part of Trump and Sessions' zero tolerance policy. And as Sessions said, this is going to be our deterrent, this cruel policy. The facility in Brownsville is overseen by the Department of Health and Human Services Office of Refugee Resettlement. And Merkley tweeted that he asked repeatedly to speak to a supervisor who finally came out and said he can't tell us anything. And then the police were called on Merkley. Early in the week, Monday, a spokesperson for Merkley issued a statement that said not only did they try to visit that Walmart store, that they also had visited a separate visit to the Border Patrol Processing Center in McAllen, Texas. And their statement said, quote, "Senator Merkley and his staff saw children in cages," end quote. Trump then tried to distract from this. He tweeted that, again, his theme that separating, quote, "separating families at the border is the fault of bad legislation passed by Democrats," which is a false statement. On Tuesday, the United Nations Human Rights Office called the Trump regimes to called on them to immediately halt the policy of separating children, saying that it was a violation of human rights and principles and not in the children's best interest. Also later in the week, there was news that the ACLU, who is doing great work on these themes, is filing a lawsuit, which the Trump regime had tried to get dismissed in San Diego. But that lawsuit will move forward, and the judge called out what is happening on our southern borders. A real-world impact of this cruelty was reported on Friday by the Washington Post. A Honduran father who was separated from his wife and children suffered a breakdown at a Texas jail and killed himself in a padded cell. This occurred on May 13th, but was not publicly disclosed by the Department of Homeland Security. The Washington Post dug this out from the Starr County Sheriff's deputy's report, which quoted Border Patrol agents on the death. Similarly, the actions of Trump's ICE, which is operating, I've compared them much in the way to Hitler's Gestapo, continued cruelty in our country. The Des Moines Register reported that a young man who was set to graduate high school in Des Moines in this coming month died a brutal death in Mexico 3 weeks after being escorted out of the U.S. by ICE. The young man had been granted DACA status, but that was taken away by ICE over a speeding ticket. He was the oldest of four siblings. Similarly, this week, the Washington Post reported on the third ICE roundup. I call it a roundup because these are multiple people, big raid by ICE. This week, 200 ICE officers blitzed two locations of Corso's Flower and Garden Center in Ohio in a raid in which they arrested 114 workers thought to be illegal, loaded them on a bus, and took them to ICE detention centers. Local activists said dozens of children were left stranded at daycare and with babysitters. This is the third major sweep of its kind. The first was the sweep of 98 7-Eleven stores by ICE in January, and the second was in April, where 97 immigrants were arrested at a meat processing plant in rural Texas. So leaving ICE and the southern border, which continues and is hopefully starting to get some attention this week after very little attention in past weeks, and our media is unfortunately not covering it as much as they should be, and we would hope they would be, because this is all very cruel and un-American. In other news on marginalized communities, for a second year in a row this week, Trump failed to recognize LGBTQ Pride Month, which I think I speak for many in our community. His non-association is not entirely unwelcome, but it's part of a broader pattern of what Trump and his regime have done since he's taken office, which is to make marginalized communities invisible. Shortly after his inauguration, his regime had removed references to LGBT people from a number of federal government websites. On Monday, the Supreme Court ruled that the baker in Colorado who refused to bake a cake for a gay couple was discriminated against by a Colorado agency, which displayed religious bias when it sanctioned him. This was a narrow Supreme Court ruling, but there was much confusion about it. But to be clear, it did not address whether businesses can refuse service to same-sex couples based on religious beliefs. Nonetheless, Trump fanned the disinformation, tweeting, "Big Supreme Court ruling for Baker just out." In the aftermath of that, a hardware store owner, Jeff Amix in Tennessee, put a sign on his store's window, "No gays allowed." The sign had originally been posted in 2015 when gay marriage became legal. The sign is back out, and Jeff says, quote, "Christianity is under attack. This is not the end. This is just the beginning." Also this week, in making marginalized communities invisible, after drawing fire in 2017 for not hosting an iftar dinner to commemorate the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, this year, the regime hosted a dinner but failed to invite any Muslim American leaders or activists. And this week, more fun in the Trump regime, federal agencies, and the people he's put in charge to run them, who are basically in the process of deconstructing them and being as corrupt as they possibly can. The first was the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, Elizabeth Warren's bureau, which I have to say, I feel for this woman how hard she fought to set this up and what good it had done for the American people. Mick Mulvaney, since he took over, has done nothing but try to take it apart piece by piece, including putting in a budget of zero. This week, Mulvaney fired a 25-member advisory council to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau after 11 of the members spoke out against him. Your friend EPA Scott Pruitt is back in the news again for more ethics violations, having his aides do personal tasks for him, like calling the Trump International Hotel to inquire about purchasing one of its used mattresses. Both he and some of his staffers trying to get his wife a job. And then enlisting his 24/7 security detail to run errands for him, including picking up his dry cleaning and his favorite moisturizing lotion. This seems like a good use of taxpayers' money. But you can understand why Trump, who came out Friday and said he continues to support Pruitt, does so. Because other news this week is that a friend of Trump, Bob Murray, CEO of Murray Cole, who we've talked about in past lists, and makes big donations to Trump, also had given Pruitt, as well as the Department of Energy's Perry, suggested executive orders. Although these did not pass, we know that there's been an unusual amount of contact. We talked about this last week between coal executives and Pruitt. Also came out this week, breaking from the New York Times, that we're changing the way in Pruitt's EPA that chemicals are being considered after heavy lobbying from industry players. So we're scaling back now what's determined risky. They're going to now exclude potential exposure caused by the substances present in the air, the ground, or water, and instead just focus on direct contact with chemicals. Also this week, on Monday evening, Trump abruptly disinvited the Philadelphia Eagles, who had won the Super Bowl this year, from a White House celebration, saying in a statement, quote, "They disagree with the president because he insists that they proudly stand for the national anthem." That is, of course, a lie. Not a single member of the Philadelphia Eagles kneeled in protest this year. But that didn't stop Fox News from the next day in their reporting on what was happening, showing videos of Eagle players kneeling, which they were, but they were praying before the game, and Fox News later had to apologize. But an example of the way Fox and Trump are working together and basically issuing lies and propaganda. So Trump had people coming anyway, so he decided he would call it a, quote, "celebration of America," which turned into a what he called a big, beautiful celebration, which lasted less than 10 minutes, and during which he struggled with the lyrics of "God Bless America," and took the opportunity to mostly talk about the economy. But he was surrounded by, as Trump loves to be, the military and American flags. And I'm always caught by the irony that this man who dodged the draft 5 times loves to be around military. He loves his parades. He loves his flags. Strange. And that seems to be a theme of authoritarians all over. Not to be outdone by himself, by the end of the week when the NBA championships were going to be played in what could be a deciding game Friday, Trump disinvited the NBA champions from coming to the White House. After they had spoken out on some of the key players on what happened with the Eagles. And it was also noteworthy that this year Trump did not invite the winner of the WNBA to come to the White House. So more not normal. We spoke about briefly Trump's attempts to obstruct justice and pardon himself. Last week, we had mentioned Kim Kardashian made a trip to the White House. And this week, Trump did pardon the 63-year-old woman who he had, her name is Alice Marie Johnson, who was a first-time nonviolent drug offender. He did pardon her. And then he also offered on Friday that he might pardon Muhammad Ali, who died in 2016. Ali's attorney later came out and said a pardon is unnecessary, that his conviction was overturned in 1971. Thank you, no thank you. But Trump, again, and I mentioned this at the top of the show, told reporters he is considering pardoning some 3,000 people, which again should alarm everybody, that he's getting a lot of practice, but as well that he thinks that he should be the person that is the arbiter of what is true. And this week, also in the Trump's witch hunt, the 20th witch was indicted. It was a case that started in the beginning of the week with Paul Manafort, where Mueller's team in the beginning of the week had filed with the court to say that Manafort and an unnamed associate linked to Russian intelligence had repeatedly contacted two members of a public relations firm and asked them to falsely testify. That happened after Manafort was indicted, and they were using a secret app to try to do that. Really tricky. Manafort was trying to fight this. Mueller is making a request to revoke or revise his release, and there's a hearing set for next week on June 15th. By the end of the week, it came out that the party working with Manafort is Konstantin Kilimnik, his longtime employee since the mid-2000s, who allegedly was there to be his Russian translator. But we also know that the FBI believes he's associated with Russian intelligence services. And Rick Gates, who is Manafort's former business partner, who was cooperating in the probe, has said that Kilimnik is a former officer of Russia's Foreign Military Intelligence Agency, the GRU. So this indictment, additional allegations against Manafort, but also an indictment of Kilimnik, makes the 20th person that was either indicted or has pled guilty in the Mueller probe. And then there's also three companies that have been indicted in this probe. Also this week, on Wednesday, Trump gathered his cabinet at FEMA headquarters for an annual briefing. Our media seemed very focused on the fact that he praised his entire cabinet except Sessions, who, as we've talked about in the beginning of the show, is trying to reingratiate himself by doing these outlandish, not normal things with the Department of Justice. But of note, we talked last week that there may have been over 4,600 Puerto Ricans killed and growing as a result of Hurricane Maria. While at FEMA, Trump made no mention of the revised death toll in Puerto Rico and gave no indication that the regime was reviewing its response to the hurricane. And that to me was shocking, and also shocking and truly disappointing. Our media didn't report on that at all or hold his feet to the fire. Trump also brought up the fact that the media has been unfair and vicious to his wife, Melania, who reappeared at that conference Wednesday, the first time that we've seen her in the public eye or heard from her in almost a month. She, however, did not accompany Trump on his trips at the end of the week, leaving Friday when he went to Quebec for the Group of Seven summit. And Trump said something to the effect that doctors said she can't fly for 1 month, which experts say, given what we publicly know about her procedure, would not be correct. On the next topic I want to talk about is Me Too, which something happened this week, which many are saying could be significant. On Tuesday, a federal judge ruled that Trump can be deposed in the Summer Zervos defamation lawsuit. And that is significant. That's something he's been fighting, and his lawyer Kasowitz has said this might need to go to the Supreme Court to rule on whether a sitting president can be sued in state court. So that is something they're fighting very hard on. On Wednesday, Stephanie Clifford, and I use her proper name, she also is, her stage name is Stormy Daniels, her attorney filed a lawsuit against Michael Cohen saying he colluded with her then lawyer, Keith Davidson. And in their lawsuit, they show numerous text messages back and forth in an attempt to get Stephanie Clifford to go on Fox News Hannity show back in January of 2017 and deny she had an affair with Trump. That happened. And then the next day, Rudy Giuliani back at it again, trashing Stephanie Clifford. First of all, he said that he finds Clifford to be unattractive and therefore not credible, saying Trump's three wives are beautiful women, classy women, great women of substance, Stormy Daniels. Pfft. He also said derogatory things that, I'm sorry, I don't respect a porn star, and any woman who respects herself, quote, isn't going to sell her body for sexual exploitation. Oh, these hypocrites. It goes deep. People were outraged by this, calling it sexist and misogynist. Senator Elizabeth Warren said his comments were a slur and insult to every woman in this country. When asked about it Friday, before he was leaving for the G7 summit, Trump said, quote, I'm not going to disagree with him on that. And ironically, Trump has appeared in three Playboy videos, but that's okay. It's okay when Trump does it. So as he was leaving for the G7 summit, which we're going to talk about now, he made several other alarming kind of statements. He spoke about the pardons, the 3,000 pardons. He said that Pruitt, again, he still was behind Pruitt. And then he, out of left field, said that Russia should be allowed to come to the G7. That it should be the G8, not the G7. Out of left field, suddenly, this happened on Friday. And leading up to the G7, which proceeds last week, where Trump unilaterally opposed tariffs against Mexico, Canada, who was hosting the G7, and the European Union, several of which countries were going to be at the G7, tensions escalated between Trump and Macron and Trudeau. It was revealed this week that Trump, in a conversation with Trudeau, had accused Canada of burning down the White House in 1812. And that was part of his rationale for the tariffs and being okay with it, even though Canada wasn't a country in 1812 and that was Britain, but, you know, minor detail. On Thursday, Trudeau tweeted an article saying that they would be detailing an even closer collaboration with France. And Macron tweeted what would be sort of a warning shot, that he was okay and they should prepare that if a text was signed by seven countries, that was going to be okay. He said, quote, we must not rule out a 6+1 agreement. Pretty foreboding. Trump arrived Friday to the G7. He arrived late to it. You could see the discomfort in the air from the pictures that were being posted. And then the next day he gave a rancorous speech in which he threatened every country with closing U.S. borders, and also, strangely again, complained that Russia was suspended from the G8, what was then the G8 in 2014, over the annexation of Crimea. And that was the first violation of European countries' borders since World War II. When asked about that by media, Trump said, well, that happened under Obama, so it really wasn't him. But in his remarks, he said that the U.S. was like a piggy bank that everyone is robbing and it never ends. He threw out some numbers on trade that the AP fact-checked and said were wrong. He started the morning by showing up late for a breakfast on empowering women. He missed Trudeau's introduction, then sat down next to Christine Lagarde and Merkel, arguably the two most powerful women. Kind of sauntered in late and looking disheveled and sat down after making quite a rouse. So he left that, and that's where we left off for week 82, but we'll have more to say on that in week 83. So as we're closing out this week, and as Trump, as we close week 82 and episode 2, is leaving the G7 early to meet with Kim Jong-un, a dictator, and out of nowhere, and 5 months ahead of our midterm election, is suddenly conjuring Putin twice in 2 days, saying he should be part of the G8. And also word is he'll be setting up a summit with Putin. I invite you to go to the Weekly List website, theweeklylist.org, and under videos, find a video that I did with moveon.org that discusses this theme, starting in the early weeks of the list, where Trump was cozying up to dictators and alienating our NATO allies in those very early weeks. That's a trend that's continued, but you'll be interested to watch it and see how it's all played out, who that benefits. It benefits Putin, who many believe had an impact on our election. And is this the payback? And why is Trump suddenly mentioning Putin as we get to the end of the week? While you're on the website, make sure you look at the picture this week that accompanies week 82 with episode 2. It's an iconic picture of Merkel, who many now argue is the leader of the free world, trying to reason with Trump. He's sitting down with his arms crossed. Macron's looking on. Japan's Abe is looking on. It's just a photo that will endure and live on and is just so telling of our time and what happened this week. I also just want to close out by mentioning that this week I hosted HBO. They're doing a documentary on the truth. And I must say that reading some of the old week's lists, which I did as part of a 3-hour interview, even though I have an encyclopedic knowledge of these things, I'm still shocked at some of the things that are not present in my mind, that are still so applicable today that he's done. So those of you that own the list, I really encourage you to each week, even if you've read the entire book, look at the list that corresponds to a year ago today and what we were doing, because I think that it's dangerous how much we are now, you know, being fed lies each and every day, and how hard it is with the conspiracy theories that Trump and Kellyanne Conway and the rest of the regime is putting forward, how much harder it is day by day to discern the truth, which is, again, a hallmark of authoritarianism, and how important it is what we do with the list in presenting you the truth and the facts each week. So I'm so happy to be doing this and be speaking to you all. Thank you all for tuning in to our second episode, and we'll look forward to hearing from you.